the narrative they share about Joseph Smith does have a lot of missing information. So you can't really have a truthful Emma Smith story without exposing...
Without having a truthful Joseph Smith story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's more than a podcast. They're more than best friends. It's more than an hour of laughing and crying and then going back to laughing again. It's more than a podcast. They're more than ex-Mormons.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to More the Mormon. I'm Lena.
And I'm Meg.
And we're happy you're here.
And here we are.
Yay!
I never know how to start.
I know. We're here. But we are here. It's going to be our thing. We're here. We're alive. Forgive the noise if you hear thunder in the background.
Is it raining there?
Experiencing. Yeah. And then our internet went out like three times between... when I finished class at around 6:15-ish to, 7:30. So let's hope that you guys don't hear a thunderstorm and that our internet stays.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, I don't mind if you hear thunderstorms, but it would really be a bummer if your internet went out.
You aren't shitting.
I apologize for any noises you hear on my end, as my cat has the zoomies and he's winding down. But right before this, he was just wrestling with his tunnel. I have one of those, like, I don't know, it's like a crinkly cat tunnel for him. And he just was, like, full, like, alligator, like, wrestling. Like, just on top of it, taking it down for, like, 30 minutes right before this. So
he's
the fact
so
that that's not happening
cute.
Is a win.
I love he's it, really, though. He's really I love it when precious. Cats get the zoomies.
Yes. Okay, it's so... before anything starts, I have to tell you
this experience. Here we go. Story time.
So I like dozed off after work today and I like woke up sort of like dreaming of a memory. Do you ever do that?
All the time.
So I was like dreaming of this memory and then at some point I was like, oh my God, that was a real thing that happened, and it was from my mission, and it just made me, like, it just killed me. And it probably won't be funny to anyone else, but when I was on my mission, I was in a trio in Arkansas, and we had contacted this person somehow, this probably, like, 20-year-old girl, and we set up, I think she had messaged us and asked for a Book of Mormon, or maybe she had requested a Book of Mormon through, like, the church's website, and then we got her information. So we set up this meeting with her at a tropical smoothie cafe, which is one of my favorite places to go. And we go, and she comes, and she brought a friend, and we had, like, a super chill conversation. I mean, as chill as you can get when it's, like, three missionaries and, like, two normal people. But we had a pretty chill conversation just about, like, the Book of Mormon and why she wanted one and what she knew about it. And then we were just like, well, as missionaries, like, we can give it, like, we'll give this to you and you can just have it. But, you know, we also would love to, like, visit you, or we can meet here again, whatever.
Of course.
We do the missionary thing. And she's like, yeah, that would be great. And gives us her information. I think we might have even set up, like, a time, or... it was a pretty set in stone thing that we were going to see her again. And her friend the whole time was, like, not at all interested. She was really polite, but she wasn't interested in us at all. So then they leave and we leave and we go about our day. And of course you have that, like, missionary high of, like, oh my God, she's awesome. Like, she's, like, you know, so prepared and whatever. And then we, like,
of
never.
Of course you get super pumped.
Right. And then we never hear from her again. Typical.
Yeah. So, everything holds up so far.
So everything's going according to plan. So at some point, me or one of my companions was on her Facebook page just, you know, trying to, like, see if she was alive, or, you know, like, if she was ghosting us, or if there was something going on. And she's swiping through her... swiping, that's like a Tinder term. But, like, scrolling, there we go. She's scrolling through her Facebook, and all of a sudden she's like... Hermanas, look at this picture. And she shows us a picture of this woman that we met dressed as a Mormon missionary holding the Book of Mormon that we gave her going to, like, a Book of Mormon musical party. And, like, good for her, right?
That is fucking amazing. Oh.
We were, like, I can't even explain to you how.
Were you, like, so pissed when you saw it, though?
I don't even know if it was, like, anger as much as it was just, like, that is, like, such a great length to go to when you could literally, like, you could get any book and on a post-it note write Book of Mormon and stick it on the front. But this girl went so far as to meet with missionaries to get a real Book of Mormon. Like, we were baffled.
You know.
And she was so convincing in her, like, her friend wasn't convincing at all. You know what I mean? Like, we were like, the friend, probably not. Do you
think that maybe she was a Mormon in some point in her life? And that's why she knew that if she wanted to get a legit Book of Mormon, all she had to do was, like, call the missionaries?
Maybe, but she was really young.
Because you have to know quite a bit about the church to figure that out, right? I mean, I guess if you just, like, go to Google and type in Mormon. Because it's, like, the first thing that, like, comes up, I think, is, like, talk to a missionary or whatever. Like, get a free copy.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I think she was just like, I want a Book of Mormon. And you can't order them online. Like, the only way to get a Book of Mormon, unless you know someone else who will give you one, like, is to go through the church. And the church will always send missionaries. So, you know, that's how, like, my mom and I met missionaries. Is my mom, I think, requested a Book of Mormon or something and thought it would get mailed to her, or, like, that she would get, like, an e-version of it, and then, like, the missionaries showed up. So I don't know if she knew that, like, she would have to go through missionaries initially, but
a lot of people don't, because they don't really, like, tell you.
And we're like, hey, we heard you want a Book of Mormon, like, when can we meet up with you to give it to you? And her whole, like, she had a whole backstory about how, like, how her, like, boyfriend used to be a Mormon, and that's how she heard about the church, and, like, she was really,
damn,
he wasn't interested,
way to go.
And he wouldn't give her a Book of Mormon, but she was just, like, really curious about it, and, like, she just wanted to read it, and she wasn't really a religious person. Like, I remember the details of the story because it was so real, and then it was all for cosplay. Like, it was all for cosplay. And in the end, isn't everything all for cosplay in one way or another?
Depending on how you look at it, I'm sure one could argue that. Way to go, girlfriend. Way to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I hope
and now,
you enjoyed the musical, and I hope everyone loved how authentic your outfit was.
Mm-hmm. And your Book of Mormon. And then I hope you threw it away, because it's trash garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just, at the time, I think I was even, like, good for her. Like, way to commit. And now it's only, like, I haven't thought about that probably since it happened, like, over 3.5 years ago.
I love when memories just pop into my head.
And now I'm just more proud of her than I ever was before. Anyway, I just had to share that with you. I don't know if anyone else will think that that's interesting, but if you're listening to this, random girl who scammed missionaries out of a Book of Mormon so that she could use it for a Book of Mormon musical cosplay party, hit us up. We'll have you on the pod.
So I found an article just, like, a couple hours before we started to record, and I honestly didn't even read it because I was laughing so hard I felt like I didn't need to. Also, hold on just a moment. For those viewing on the TV screen, my 15-pound cat just put his asshole in your face, and I apologize. I think he might actually be a little afraid of the rainstorm.
My mom's old cat used to be really afraid of thunder and loud noises, and when we watched the fireworks that happened, like, really close to my mom's house, we would just put her in the kitchen cabinet because that's where she liked to go.
Oh, B, do you want to go in the kitchen cabinet?
He might like it's cozy, small, dark.
Oh, God, that's so fucking funny. Anyway, so I was scrolling. I was just kind of having dinner, taking some time. And I came across an article that was posted on the New York Times. And it says, among Mormon women, frank talk about sacred underclothes. Frustrated by itchy, constrictive, church-designed garments, they are asking for better fit, more options, and buttery soft fabric.
Wait. Okay, wait. This article is, yes, like...
Yes. I kid you not.
Just specifically about, yes, Mormon and, yes, endowed Mormon women who are upset about garments.
You are correct.
Who on the New York Times is covering this stuff? It's probably the same girl that...
Her name is Ruth Graham.
Okay, Ruth. How, yep, and why, and mostly why, but also how, but mostly why.
She tells us. She tells us.
Can you imagine if you knew, like, you had no context for, like, Mormonism or garments, and you were just, like, a New York Times reader? And this is on the New York Times.
Yep, yep. This is why I'm like, oh, this is gold. This is gold.
This is why the church is like, it's not secret, it's sacred, but it's actually just like super fucking weird. So they're like, everyone stop talking about it. And the only way they can convince people to do that is by being like, this is sacred to us.
Yep.
Because if you asked me to wear a weird pair of underwear, I would tell everyone immediately. But if you asked me to wear weird underwear and then you were like, hey, this is really important to me, like, please don't tell anyone, then I care about you, so I might consider not telling anyone. As long as they're buttery soft. You might consider it.
Buttery soft. So this girl talks about how she was on a hike in Idaho and she started to get a rash above her thigh. And she talks about the fact that being sweaty and being in these garments is what caused the rash. And she said, after another painful hike, she stopped wearing the garments when exercising and occasionally removed them overnight. Both changes felt significant, since church members have historically been encouraged to wear the garments night and day, but they were simply too uncomfortable, and she didn't stop there. Last month, Miss Pitten, the woman who got the rash, posted several cheerfully direct pleas on Instagram where she discusses church culture as at the Mormon Hippie. That's her Instagram handle. We really want buttery soft fabric, she said, addressing her comments to the church's 96-year-old president, Russell M. Nelson. My vagina has to breathe.
Wow, that's a bold way to go at the prophet. Like, if you want him to respond.
Like, are you serious? Whoa.
I agree with her. I mean, I'm not saying she's wrong, but, like, damn.
Most active church members, including young people, take seriously the exhortation to wear them as often as possible. In a 2016 poll of 1,100 Latter-day Saints, just 14% of millennial church members said that they believed it was acceptable to remove the garments if they were uncomfortable. So they wanted the church to make a comment. And of course, the church is like, oh, hell no, we are not going to talk and make a comment. And the same comment where people are making comments about their vagina.
Mm-hmm.
There is a quote in here that killed me, though. Aside from, you know, my vagina has to breathe. Let me see if I can find it.
Aside from that. So what is the article like?
It's literally just talking about all the issues with the garments. Like, she talks about, she, as in the author, talks about different women who discuss getting a lot of yeast infections, UTIs, and all of that due to the garments, because they're not designed for someone who has a vulva and a vagina.
You're telling me that, like, God, who knows everything and created everyone and everything, including women and their vaginas, didn't consider people's physical health? or mental well-being when designing something that they were
covenant to wear. It's because you know who actually decided that garments were going to be worn by men and women night and day? A bunch of white dudes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This is like, have you seen, this is like an old trend, but I'm sure you could find it on YouTube or TikTok or something. This girl wrote a song about how NASA sent a woman on her period into space for 6 days and they gave her 100 tampons. And she's just like singing. She's like, these are literal rocket scientists.
Yeah.
100 tampons.
Remember when NASA sent a woman to space for only 6 days and they gave her 100 tampons. 100 tampons. And they asked, will that be enough? Because they didn't know if that was enough. These are our nation's greatest minds. They are literally rocket scientists.
Like, it's the same thing. It's like,
how many periods do you think she's having in that 6 days? Because 100 tampons,
we can't be sending
lot.
Her to space if she's bleeding that much. Like, she shouldn't have passed the physical. Like,
she should see a doctor like right away. She should maybe be on like multiple forms of hormonal birth control.
She should definitely be on planet Earth, like where the doctors are. Yeah, anyway, this is just has similar vibes to, like, looking at it from my perspective as a woman. I'm like, the first thing I think about if I'm designing underwear is the breathability, the comfort, mm-hmm. like,
yep.
the stain resistance. Like,
because, again, garments are white.
They're white.
Vaginas
it's not like
are
when you get endowed your
cleaning,
period.
And so even if you're not on your period, you're going to release discharge. Sometimes it's yellow. It is seriously the most frustrating thing. Anyway, it's a huge, long article, longer than I thought. But it says, quote, everybody I talked to was getting some kind of rash or infection. The word she heard over and over from women was suffocation. And then it finishes by saying, it's a greater magnitude than the church has any idea about. Either get into the underwear business or get out.
Okay.
And I'm dying.
This is the news we needed today. Like, this
Let
is
me show you
the good news.
The picture the gospel, that popped up, and this is like say. Originally what got my attention. It is. So I'm going to describe it for the listeners, and I'm going to show it to you. So it's a picture of garments on the table that came from the church, because we know a few years ago the church released like this temple garment video, and they show a picture of the garments. However, it's not clear enough to actually see like the markings, so they don't really look too sus. And it says, quote, suffocation. My vagina has to breathe. It isn't bringing me closer to Christ. It's giving me UTIs.
Oh my god, that's like the kind of the style of this picture with the image with the text overlaid is very similar to like the memes that people, not the memes, but like the things that people share after general conference.
I thought it was a meme,
like an inspirational quote.
That literally is why it stopped me. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a weird meme, but okay, all true. And then I realized it was an article from the New York Times. So way to go, New York Times.
Yeah.
thank you for
putting
talking
about the important issues.
Thank you for talking about the important issues, because this is everything to do with vaginal and feminine health and everything to do with the crazy bullshit that is the Mormon Church.
And
so
the patriarchy that controls
and the patriarchy.
Literally every element of women's lives is not, there's no, where's the agency? You can't even decide to wear underwear that doesn't give you rashes and UTIs and makes you uncomfortable. Because
yep.
People
wonder why the Mormon Church is classified as a cult, and there are a lot of reasons. And I say that because there's actual markers that make an organization a cult, and the church meets several of that criteria.
Many.
We'll get to that in a different episode.
Yeah.
However, one of the things is control of dress and grooming, and the control of someone's underwear is a lot more control than anybody outside of the Mormon church gives. And like, that is insane. If you think about it, in an abusive relationship, you know, if your friend, your sister, whoever comes to you and says, my boyfriend is telling me that I have to dress a certain way in order for him to love me and like be seen with me in public, everyone would be super pissed, right?
Yeah.
If that person said, my boyfriend tells me that I need to wear certain lingerie in the bedroom and it makes me uncomfortable, people would be really pissed. So when thousands, maybe even millions of women are saying, like, not only are these garments just fucking uncomfortable, but they make me feel bad about my body. They don't make me feel sexy. They don't make me feel pretty, but they give me rashes. They give me UTIs. There's yeast infections. There's physical things happening to your body that are not good. And everybody just kind of ignores it. And it is such a patriarchal thing. These garments weren't created by women, as far as I know. I would love to see some evidence otherwise. I didn't look into it. And the revelation came from a man to wear these things night and day. And the transformation of these garments has not gotten any better in terms of health for the female body. I should say people with a vulva.
Really excited.
And that patriarchal thing leads into everything we're going to talk about today. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I'm really excited for the moment that I hope will happen at General Conference, where there's just like some speaker has to be the one to be like, in regards to recent conversation about the sacred temple garment, and then they announce some new bullshit revelation. Or, yep. You know, even if it's not General Conference at some point, I mean, they'll update their styles, they'll update their fabric, they'll call it Revelation, and they won't give any credit to the fucking New York Times, because they just said no comment. Or for the women
who have been pushing for garment quality changes for years, because this isn't new. They were constantly updating garments, and when I was a member, I was always looking for something that fit me better, and
didn't
give me any sort of physical issues, and I was always getting new garments because they're always changing, always updating, and every time I was like, this is no better. Yeah. This is the same, but like, now I paid more.
Yeah, I remember.
Like, this is bullshit.
I remember you wearing garments and they were like peeking out the bottom of your shorts, and I was like, girl, get the petite ones, like, you're short. And you were like,
these are the petite.
And I was like, then I don't know.
I couldn't even wear basketball shorts.
What to help you? Yeah.
Do you know what it's like to be in the summer and not be able to even wear basketball shorts? Like,
I mean, I do.
So when I ended up getting kicked out of BYU, this is actually what spiraled it, is my roommate seeing me wear shorts without my garments, because it was like, I don't know, 82 degrees in the house because everyone was from fucking Arizona and nobody would let me turn the AC on. Anyway, well, that's also another story.
Well, and the other thing is, like, they're like, you can't, you know, you have to wear your garments at all time. You get turned into the fucking honor code office if you're not wearing your garments, because apparently it's other people's business what underwear you're wearing. But then also, I've had so many roommates, you included, who just, like, I wasn't in doubt, and they just, like, walked around fully in just their garments. Like, just their garments. And it's like, well, that's okay. But, like, why is it, does that make any sense? Like, where does the modesty line fall in that I'm not allowed to see, like, your knees when you're wearing basketball shorts, but not your garments, but I am allowed to, like, fully see.
There's a lot of people who say, like, oh, sacred. I grew up seeing my parents in their garments. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Every single one of my mission companions. I mean, not to, like, make anyone uncomfortable, but, like, it was normal to see anyone endowed, like
getting ready for the day. Maybe like
a top or a bottom for like pajamas or whatever, but it wasn't abnormal to see someone who was endowed, you know, in the privacy of their own home, just be in their garments.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't have served a mission and been with several companions who did that. You know, so when I got to BYU Idaho and I had, you know, you as a roommate who hadn't been in doubt, I was like, oh, whatever, like, she's going to get endowed someday and she's going to see it and mm-hmm. it is what it is. And, you know, like it was either that or completely remove them because it was too hot to get in all these layers just to be modest.
Yeah. You know, there is that idea, that expectation that like, well, everyone will have them eventually. Cause I hated garments. They were like the first thing to go. When my testimony started to quiver even a little bit, I was like, well, I don't need to wear these bitches anymore. Yep. But like, it was really normal for me to like, even just like fold my laundry with like my roommates in my apartment that weren't endowed, like in the room, just like folding my garments because everyone like knows what they look like, knows what they are.
It's just one of those things in the culture that's accepted and nobody really thinks twice about it. And like,
but if you see someone's garments peeking out like outside of that scenario, I know.
You're like, it's like, oh my gosh, your jeans are showing.
Garments are showing, like, or like, hey, just we would know, make jokes like
we can see your covenants.
Oh. That quote just brought back a lot of upsetting memories.
Yeah, that is a really backwards showing. Thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never actually really thought about that. But yeah, you make a really good point. You make a really good point. Oh my goodness.
So, that being said, what we want to talk about forever is essentially like the root of damaging patriarchal relationships in the church, which starts with, of course, the founder of the Restoration, Joseph Smith.
Yep.
And his wives, because there were many. Watching the Emma Smith movie recently, because I watched it a few weeks ago when we were going to talk about this, and there was red flags popping up all over. And that's, I don't know, was that produced by the church or just like, I know it's like approved by the church, but
I don't know. I think it was probably like, I don't know. I don't think it was produced by the church, but I think they probably like hired like a, like an independent company or something
mm-hmm.
to do the film because they had like, you know, the version of the prophet, the restoration, like the 15-minute version, the 30-minute version or whatever.
Yeah.
They have like a longer version. That's just like the Emma Smith story. And that wasn't put on by the church, I don't think.
Okay. It's hard to tell. Like a lot of things. It's hard to tell exactly what comes from like the church and what doesn't. On my mission, we were allowed to watch anything in like the church media library. On one of our iPads, pull up like Johnny Lingo or like some random like church-ish movie that we had access to, and we'd like pretend like we were having a movie night and watch a movie, which is just sad. But I've watched the Restoration movie a lot.
Yep, me too.
Maybe we should react to that one at some point too, because I haven't watched it since my mission, but watched it a lot. And I watched this is a random story too, but one of the members in one of the branches I was serving in was like, Hermanas, can you guys come over and help me juice a bunch of limes because I want to make ceviche? And we're like, sure, of course, we'll be there.
Okay.
And we go over and she had like turned her like TV around so it was facing the kitchen, and she put on the Restoration movie, like the long one, in Spanish for us to watch, so you guys while we juiced limes.
Oh,
it was very
so sweet.
And a great time. A great time was had by all. Like, just juiced limes and watched the Restoration. Not as
yeah,
the
I actually I have pretty good memories of watching those movies. But I do view Joseph Smith and Emma Smith very differently now, obviously, than I'm out of the church. I mean, it's pretty easy to say that a lot of people who leave the church have issues with Joseph Smith, so I don't think that's too much of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I do feel like, not that the church portrays Emma like falsely, like they don't necessarily lie about anything, but I do think that they try to place, like, they try to make it look like she just, like, lost her way. And yeah. As a result of just, like, all the sadness and trials and turmoil that she experienced through her life. So they, you know, they try to give her some compassion and empathy, but they, I don't know. I feel like Emma Smith is way smarter than we give her credit for.
I agree. I think the narrative they want to portray is that, like, she fell in love with Joseph Smith, like, first as the person and then as the prophet, and it's hard to be married to a prophet, so, like, the persecution comes, and, like, I think it's really well known that they, like, lost a lot of children and, like, you know, like, those kinds of things, and then it just kind of, at least in the Restoration movie version, it's like Joseph died and she was so sad she lost her faith. And it skips over a lot of, like, other things that happened to her. Like, not just because she was married to a prophet and, like, that's hard, but specifically because she was married to Joseph Smith, who was a terrible person and a terrible mm-hmm. husband to her.
Yep.
And, like, that's yep. the part that, like, of, like, whether she, like, for whatever reason that she lost her faith, it doesn't matter if it was because she was sad or because she experienced this trial or that trial. Like,
agreed.
The important
part. It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, the important part of her story shouldn't be about her faith so much as it should be about the fact that, like, she was married to Joseph Smith, who the church holds in very high regard, and that the narrative they share about Joseph Smith does have a lot of missing information. So you can't yep. really have a truthful Emma Smith story without exposing...
Without having a truthful Joseph Smith story.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with the church, Emma Smith, like we said, married to Joseph Smith. I just did, like, a quick Wikipedia/church like check, and I just wrote down, like, some basics. Can you see my screen, Meg?
No, I cannot.
Okay. what about now? You can't see it, can you?
No.
Okay. Anyway, I'll just tell you what I have. So Emma Smith was born on July 10th, 1804, to Isaac and Elizabeth Hale in Pennsylvania.
Oh my god, she just had a birthday.
She did!
Happy birthday, girl.
Happy birthday, Emma Smith. So she met Joseph while he was living with the Hale family. So I don't actually know a whole lot about how exactly he got to the point of, like, living with them. I feel like I knew this at one point, don't recall. Do you know? Opie, come here.
As far as I understand, it was Joseph Smith was hired by Emma Smith's father at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like he didn't really like Joseph. Like, Emma Smith's father didn't like Joseph, but Joseph was hired by him at some point, and that's sort of how they became acquainted and how he came to be, like, close to the family, even though he didn't like him very much.
Okay, that's what I thought. Wikipedia does have a source. Say what you want about Wikipedia, but it's actually a pretty damn good source, especially, you know, for basics like this. They did have a resource about the fact that at this time, Joseph Smith was working with a company that hired him. Like, there's, like, a group of people to go do some dream mine digging
mm-hmm.
and basically treasure digging. Yeah. And spoiler alert, wasn't successful. And that is one of the reasons that Emma's parents didn't like Joseph Smith is, you know, he has this treasure digging history. It's kind of weird on top of his spiritual claims that, you know, that he's seen God and he knows that there's, like, this restoration coming. And between those things, he and his wife did not approve of the relationship. And so Emma
right
and
like imagine
Joseph,
imagine if your child started dating a person who, like, their job was, like, they took a metal detector to the beach and just, like, hoped for the best. Like, obviously you'd be like, I mean, yeah. I would prefer you dated someone with, like, something a little more like consistent, especially, like a little more
especially reliable. When you consider, you know, the time.
Yeah.
You know, that when parents give away their daughter to be married, they expect that the husband will be someone who will financially and emotionally support, more so financially than anything else. And so the fact that Joseph Smith was an unsuccessful treasure digger doesn't surprise me when I hear that Emma's parents were like, yeah, no.
Yeah, red flags go off. I get it.
Yeah. Lots of red flags.
If you told me that your husband quit his job to be a treasure digger, I would be like, do you need a place to stay?
Like, I know you would. I would be like, I know. Like, that's the thing. You know, like, if you think about this in modern days, it's like, let's not talk about, you know, as we get into the future of, you know, Joseph Smith, let's not talk about how the times were different. Because Warren Jeffs does exactly what Joseph Smith did, and that's happening right now.
Right. And,
you know, although, the times were not different. And that doesn't give any excuse.
And regardless
of time, that's an apologetic answer that's not acceptable.
Right. And regardless of, like, the time period, like, manipulating people isn't okay. Abusing people isn't okay. Like, taking
being a con man, advantage of
children is not okay. Being a con man, not okay. Like, yeah. So, regardless of time, I think it makes sense that Emma Smith's father was concerned that his child was entering into this relationship with a person who's not trustworthy and who has this known history of being a little skeevy.
A little sketch,
yeah.
So, because they did not have the support from Emma's parents, they decided to go elope. And they did that in January of 1827. And in September of that year, Emma was the one who helped Joseph retrieve the plates. And so that's kind of like one of the big things that the church kind of starts with, is like Emma and Joseph falls in love. Everybody loves this little romance. Emma Smith was actually a little bit older than Joseph Smith. I believe that she was 21 and he was 19. You know, so it's like this young, happy, romantic experience. They go elope, and, you know, I think there's something kind of like romantic in and of itself of having the disapproval and then going and eloping. It's kind of like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a tale as old as time. Yeah.
Yep. And so, you know, it's actually kind of funny that this is like a very truthful part of the history of the church, because it is so romanticized. Like, this sounds like something that could be made up, because they make it sound like such a fairy tale.
Yeah, there's those scenes in the Emma Smith movie and in like the Joseph Smith Prophet of the Restoration movie where it's like
they make their love look so sweet.
It's like they just pray together and they just like throw snowballs. And it's like a Hallmark movie.
I'm not trying to say that there wasn't romance, that there wasn't love, that there were not laughter and good times. Like, I'm not saying that. We don't know. You know, and Emma respected Joseph Smith until the day she died. However, as someone who has experienced emotional abuse, I can tell you that I can still look back in awe, if you will, at some of the good parts of that relationship. So just because something has good moments, that doesn't mean that it's ultimately not abusive, coercive. You know, and because of the patriarchal setting just in the 1800s alone, you know, there's already grooming for women to kind of be like under the thumb of men, if you will.
Sure.
But I feel like when you're married to someone like Joseph Smith, who I consider to be a narcissist, and, you know, as we kind of go into it, like it makes sense that Emma had to be this docile creature, especially when we get into some of the revelations that Joseph supposedly had about Emma, and he used that as a way to like put her in her place.
Right. And I mean, think about how manipulative it is to try to date someone at the same time that you're trying to convert them to a religion that you've essentially made up. There's not, for Emma Smith, I mean, I feel like it's not fair to really, to try and separate the two, because when you have feelings for someone, you know, emotional feelings, romantic feelings for someone, I would like to think that most people have been in that situation where it's hard to separate, you know, what you know logically and what you're feeling about a person.
Especially at 19 to 21 years old.
When you're young and when you...
That is a very susceptible age.
When you
absolutely susceptible.
When you want to look for, like, the good in people and, like, the good in situations, it just makes sense that if your boyfriend was like, oh, I had this beautiful religious experience, like, of course you'd be inclined to believe him or to want to believe him. And the church, I think, shows this in a way that is also romanticized, instead of really, like, really taking a good objective look at it and saying, like, oh, well, that was probably... a deciding factor for Emma in terms of both her faith and her relationship, because they were so connected from the beginning. Even in the movie, well, I don't keep like referencing the movie, but that's like the most I have. The most,
you
like,
guys,
in my
we
brain.
Will link below the movies. I think at some point we'll do a reaction, but. The movies themselves are really long, and obviously our podcast goes way out of hand, and so we don't want to, like, try and combine them all in this one episode. So we'll link it, and then if you guys are interested in doing, like, a reaction video, let us know. Give it a like.
Yeah. So in the movie, which I reference a lot, and I do that because that's not only,
this
like,
is something
most of what I know, but...
A lot of people have... watched in the church, and the movie itself, whether anyone has seen it or not, is a perfect depiction of how the relationship between Emma and Joseph is explained in the church.
Right. Yeah, I see it as whether or not it's true, that's like what the church wants you to believe is true.
Yes.
And there's a scene in one or both of the movies where Emma Smith is like, I think it's true. And then they kiss, and like under the bridge or whatever.
Yes.
So there's, it's really intertwined, her faith in this church and in this doctrine and in her husband being a prophet, and also her like relationship with him as his wife and as his partner and the mother of his children. Like, you know, those roles are each so different and they're each so important. And for Emma Smith, I don't think there was ever a time where she could really separate her identity as a person from her faith.
I agree. I agree completely. So, you know, jumping back to, you know, September 1827, they're making the plan to get the plates. And, you know, they take this horse, it's dark, supposedly a mob comes, you know, and tries to find the plates after them. It's like this huge ordeal. And I'm curious, like, oh, it's absolutely cinematic. And I'm just so curious, like, what the conversation was like. I Joseph, like, explaining to Emma what is happening, what the plan is.
Sorry.
You're right. He does have the zoomies. He still has the zoomies.
He still does.
And I'm just, like, curious what that conversation was like. And if it is... I have such a hard time saying, like, if it is true. Because it's like, I don't believe there ever were plates. And so...
Right.
What did they actually go down there to retrieve? What was she actually holding? Is this story something that she... agreed to lie about along with Joseph, or did he actually trick her? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it's the same with
I'm confused about what actually happened here.
It's the same with how we talked about this last time. You know, what's the extent that Mormon prophets know that it's fake? Like, do they like actually like not believe any of it? Do they believe most of it, but they sort of think that like, well, you have to lie about this and this in order to protect the overall thing? And that's not a far fetched idea, considering, like, I always think about the story in the Book of Mormon where, you know, Nephi has to like kill a drunk man in order to like retrieve the plates and better everything, because God couldn't just tell him what was on the plates, like he had to kill somebody. I think there's this idea in the church that's like, if God allows maybe a little bit of like sketchy behavior, but it's ultimately for, you know, building Zion or whatever, then it's okay. And I agree. I wonder if Emma Smith and even, you know, Oliver Cowdery, those kinds of people, if they knew maybe more than we think they did, maybe they weren't as in the dark as we think that they are. Their testimonies weren't real or that their faith wasn't real, but just that the facts of what happened might have been blurred.
Yep.
Along the way.
You know, and I do, you know, this is just like my personal theory. I kind of have an inkling that Emma knew everything that was going on and was either brainwashed into lying for him, or she chose to lie because it was dangerous to tell the truth. I don't know. This is my theory.
Right.
Because, you know, the first thing, you know, that makes me think this is like, you know, this very exact scenario of like, apparently she helped Joseph retrieve these plates. She supposedly held them in her hands, but she never actually saw the gold because they were always covered. And the movie depicts Emma having this moment of like temptation where the plates are like laying on the table and they're covered with this cloth. And you see her like run her fingers over the book and you see like the wheels turning in her head of like, it's right here. No one's around. I could just like pull it up and peek. But she didn't, supposedly. And
not only is that in the movie, I think that's a really common, I don't know, like folk tale of Mormonism that comes up a lot when talking about like obedience and temptation, those kinds of things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. They use that as such a great example. Yep. And so, you know, I just think like, I feel pretty confident saying the plates didn't exist. So either she's absolutely lying with Joseph because she loves him and she wants to cover for him, or she has been brainwashed, coerced, manipulated, tricked into doing it. Perhaps maybe there was something, you know, and like, I feel like that takes a lot more conjecture to think that Joseph actually had something, but she never actually saw what it was for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's more likely that she was lying, you know, and I do think that she probably had a lot of issues with Joseph. But again, at the time, you know, divorce and stuff like that is just, you know, super taboo. And she had a lot of babies. A lot of them didn't survive. You know, so another thing that I found really interesting is that she was actually baptized by Oliver Cowdery and not Joseph himself, it's just a fact. I find it interesting. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it does kind of, you know, just adds to, you know, this theory that I have going in my head of like, maybe the relationship wasn't as it seemed and maybe he's tricked her. Emma was authorized by Joseph to create some of the hymns. She becomes the Relief Society president.
Okay. When I was watching the movie a couple weeks ago, the scene where he, like, announces the founding of the Relief Society and he's like, you know, God has revealed to me that this special, strong person should be the Relief Society president. And then he's like, that person is Emma Smith, like his wife. I thought about, like, at the time, I'm a prideful person. Always have been, always will be. Not super in the growth mindset mode as I was when I was a Mormon. I was like, I can't ever be prideful. Like, I have to push what I think and feel aside. But I would have been the person that's like, well, of course he chose his wife. You know what I mean? Like, does that really come from God? Or is that like, of course he chose his wife?
It literally feels like no surprise whatsoever.
Right. I would have been like that bitch in the back of the,
like, is that really a revelation? Like,
arms folded, rolling my eyes, like whispering to my friends, like, come on.
A 1,000,000,000%.
And I say that because I was that person. Not my whole time in the church, but.
Same.
This is a tangent, but I had complained to a friend of mine about how when I was home in my, like, really little branch, my YSA branch that I went to most of the time, like, I always had a calling, and I always had, like, a pretty big calling, and I just always felt like, you know, I was needed, and I was wanted, and I had something to offer. And then I was like, yeah, but in Rexburg and, like, my YSA ward, it's like the bishop doesn't know me, and he doesn't take the time to get to know me. Like, the last time I met with him, it was like, what's your name? Where are you from? Are you keeping all of the honor code? Okay, bye, have a good day. You know, it was like 2 minutes. So I was like, he doesn't know me. Like, it's a little sketchy, because I feel like, you know, like, are callings given in those YSA wards by revelation? Or is it literally just like the bishop meets everyone and he's like, I like these ones, you know? So I had this conversation with someone, and this was probably like the last week of a semester. So then, like, 2 weeks later, the next semester, we get new callings, and I was like, I don't know, I don't remember if I was first or second. I was a counselor in the Relief Society presidency. And I was like, this is suspicious that I was just complaining, and not even complaining, but just kind of bringing this conversation up.
And see, with friends. And depending on who you are, you can say, oh my God, Heavenly Father knew, and he just had to, like, hold out a little bit longer. Yeah. And the thing is, for me, I learned on my mission. That was actually one of my shelf-breaking things, is, like, it occurred to me very early on in my mission that callings are not divine.
Got it all.
It's not about that at all. And the
big positions are about... No, it's, like, who has a car, who has money, who has influence.
Who comes, who pays their tithing, who is bold, who does the talking, who's good at fellowshipping. Those are going to be the Relief Society presidents. Those are going to be the Elders Quorum presidents, bishops, whatever. And it was very disappointing to learn that the calling I had as a ward missionary when I first got baptized wasn't this, you know, wonderful revelation that my bishop got. Because I
give her a calling that will keep her.
That calling was one of the reasons I felt like I had to go on a mission. I felt that little calling was my preparation for the next year that I would undergo before I actually got to go on my mission, because I was ready, like, let's go. And even when my bishop was like, if there was a church policy change, like, tomorrow, that converts could go on their mission before the year mark, like, we would put in your papers. Like, I was that, like, on fire and ready. Mm-hmm. And I remember the moment, like, sitting there, I was like, oh shit, it's just because I was a new convert and I was on fire and I was ready. It had nothing to do with any revelation. In fact, it probably had a lot more to do with the fact that I was a convert. You know, at the time I still had my piercings in, you could see my tattoos, and so I could relate a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, so anyway, when you look at Emma Smith as Relief Society president and you say, like, there's someone in the back of the class rolling their eyes, I feel like that's probably true even in someone who has, like, the biggest faith in the church. Mm-hmm. And depending on how you look at it, you know, a calling can be, you know, some sort of grace from God, or it could be some suspicious shelf item that you toss up there because you're like,
wait a second,
this is too coincidental.
I remember having multiple callings in Relief Society presidencies and having to assign, like, visiting teachers, and not that there wasn't, like, any prayer involved, but the gist of it, like, the conversation was, okay, well, this girl, this is all hypothetical, I'm not talking about real people, for example, this girl has a bird and she loves birds, and this girl works at a zoo. So I just think, like, they could really, like, do some, like, phenomenal fellowshipping of each other. I just think it makes sense. I just feel really good in my heart about them being visiting teaching
it's
companion.
A perfect pair.
Yeah, it's not, or it's like, okay, this girl doesn't have a car, but I think she would be really good to go visit this person. And since this girl does have a car, we'll just make them companions so that, like, she can drive.
And they live right next to each other, so if when we ask so-and-so to do the driving, it's, like, not that big of a deal.
Right.
And kind of like we talked about in the last episode, you shared a story about your friend asking you for a ride and you saying no because you didn't have the time, you didn't have the energy. You know, it, when you're active in the church, it is... like pretty controversial to like say no when someone asks you to do something, mm-hmm. whether that's accept a calling or give someone a ride, especially if it's someone who's less active or investigating the church. Like there is a lot of pressure and obligation to bend over backwards for these people. And I'm not saying that being willing to serve and help and fellowship and befriend people is not a good thing, because it is. However, again, one of those signs of a cult is running you dry of your energy, you know, soaking up all of your spare time and doing so in a way that's like wrapped up and enveloped with the church and its doctrine and material. And so,
yeah, you know, I used to go.
It's really time consuming to be the one to like prep for the classes, spend what used to be 3 hours every Sunday, something on Wednesday, FHE on Monday, mm-hmm. giving rites to so-and-so,
I used
attending
to go
meetings.
To some church activity, whether it was an activity or a meeting or actual church or visiting someone. You know, if I had a calling, I would go with, like, one of the counselors, go visit people. I would do it every single day except for, like, one day a week. Like, I would be like, okay, on Thursday, that's, like, my day to, like, not have to do a church thing. But, and I always have worked full-time jobs. Like, I've always right. had, like, I've been in and out of school for a million years. Like, it's not, it hasn't been something that's, like, necessarily comes easy. But it's just one of those things where it's, like, it's Monday. I have a calling. I'm a, to whatever extent, like an influence.
It just becomes something that you begin
ward.
To like check off of your list.
It's one of those things where it's like, I'm not going to FHE because I want to go, but I'm going because I like have to go. I have to go to FHE.
Exactly.
I have to go to Institute. I have to do this thing. I have to go to
all
meetings.
All of a sudden you realize that your agency isn't really your agency.
No, it's like the underwear
like,
situation.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
like,
I agree to this,
even though
but now
you
I have
a choice. Like, even though you have a choice to like go to FHE or like accept a calling or whatever, like the stigma and the, you know, internalized fear that you get outweighs you know, prioritizing your mental health. And I hate how the church does that. I hate it.
Of course, we talked way too long. And this episode has become a two-parter. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, make sure you follow us so that you'll know when part two comes out. Or if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe and turn on notifications. Thank you so much for listening to our tangents, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the More Than Mormon podcast. If you made it this far, then you're definitely worthy to enter the Telestial Kingdom. Wait, is that the good one?